Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Join us as we visit the real Norway today on Advanced. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Simon, and you are joining both me and my co-host, Campbell, in the studio this morning for our August travel article. Hey, Campbell.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Simon. Good to be here.
Campbell, what is our article titled today?
Well, today we're talking about Norway. The title is Real and Rugged Norway.
Oh, real and rugged. What would it be if it wasn't real?
It'd be fake, I guess.
I guess. That's a good question. I suppose they're talking about the way some of these countries are changing, right, throughout the course of this article. And this person in particular is on a search for what you might call authenticity or realism in Norway, right? And they're doing that, of course, by heading to rugged parts of the country, more wilderness areas that less exposed to people. So we're going to have a look at a side of Norway that is maybe less commonly seen by tourists today. There's actually a subtitle there for us. What's it say?
Well, it says gorgeous scenery with hints of danger. So later on, we're going to see that there's certain areas of Norway, while beautiful, they do carry a tinge of danger.
Yeah. Campbell, you haven't been to Norway.
I have not.
I have not been to Norway either. Are you attracted to dangerous travel?
I do like adventure, and I do like doing things that maybe some people would call thrill-seeking, you know, in some ways. Even though they do scare me, I do like the challenge.
Now, when you see this term, hints of danger, it's kind of different than dangerous, right?
Right.
It sort of means...
Means like it seems dangerous, but it's actually pretty safe.
I think you probably used a good word when you said adventure.
Yeah.
Adventurous, right?
Yes.
I think of places like New Zealand as being like that.
With all the sheep?
I was thinking more the glaciers and the mountains, but sure. Sheep, I suppose, are not always friendly. So that's what we're looking for today, kind of an adventurous trip through this northern country of Norway. Now, listeners, if you have your magazine, we're going to do two readings today. I would encourage you to open your magazine and join us. If you don't have a magazine, I would encourage you to think about pausing the program and going to get one, because it's the easiest way to support us here at Advanced Radio. So, I'm going to assume you have your magazine. Let's open it up and do the first of our two readings together now.
Real and Rugged Norway. Gorgeous scenery with hints of danger. The sun drifted teasingly toward the Norwegian Sea, an amber ball suspended as if from a string. It touched down gently on a low peninsula as the Richard Wythe turned to starboard. The finger of land threatened to obstruct the view from those of us standing on a high deck astern, but we checked by our watches. For the second time on our cruise north along Norway's western coast, we had viewed the sun at midnight. Nods and words of agreement rose in Norwegian, English, and other languages. My primary purpose was to sail the fjords, the long glacier-formed inlets that jut into Norway's expansive western coastline. Along the route north, the fjords shelter harbor towns over which verdant mountains rise like castle walls. In front of many, a modest lighthouse stands sentry.
Thank you for doing the reading, Campbell. I'm going to be honest with you. It's nice to have the reader in the studio, if just because there are words here that will not be easy to pronounce.
And yes.
I want to repeat that we appreciate the research that you readers do preparing to read those things. It's handy, I'm sure, especially for our listeners who are sometimes less comfortable with pronouncing words incorrectly than native speakers are.
Yes.
Yeah. So it tells us here that the sun drifted teasingly towards the Norwegian Sea. Now, when the sun is drifting towards the sea, would you say it's morning or night?
I would say it's coming down, right? It's more of a sunset type of feel.
Okay, so it's definitely evening, but they're saying it's drifting teasingly, which, you know, when you're teasing someone, it's kind of like you're, what would you say, tricking them?
Or like, you know, tantalizing them, playing around with them a little bit.
Okay, so it's heading towards the sea, but maybe not reaching the sea.
Yeah, that kind of feeling.
Okay, and we'll get into why that is as we continue through this reading. So the sun is then described as an amber ball.
Mm-hmm.
Amber, of course, is a color here. It's kind of like an orange yellow, actually the same color as that stone.
The
amber, right?
The amber. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's suspended as if from a string. And then what does it do?
Well, it touched down gently on a low peninsula as the Richard With, which is a cruise ship or a boat, turned to starboard.
I'll be honest, the name threw me for a little bit when
I was reading
over this.
It did me too as I was preparing for the reading.
Yeah, the Richard With doesn't tell us what Richard is with.
Yes.
And so that part is kind of missing there, but nonetheless, it's the name, so we'll just take it as is. It's touching on a low peninsula. A peninsula, of course, is kind of an area of land that is sticking out into the ocean from the mainland.
Yeah, so three sides of it is, compared to an island, an island is completely surrounded. A peninsula only has three of its sides surrounded by water.
Why do they describe it as low? Oh, trick question. No, it's just because there's no mountains on it.
Oh, good
question. You know, like if there were mountains on the peninsula,
mm-hmm.
you'd have to kind of look up at the land.
Yeah.
But this one, you know, it's pretty close to the water.
Yeah.
And so it kind of fits in with the teasing of the sun.
Ah.
Like, you know, it almost gets down and then, no, it doesn't do it. And then it tells us that our ship, the Richard With, turned to starboard.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm throwing another trick question at you here. We haven't talked about this.
This one I studied. So starboard is actually the right side of the boat. And the reason it's called starboard has nothing to do with stars. So it actually has with the old English word steer, which is the word for steer. So in the old days, that's the side that would have the steers, the oars that would move the boat. And the opposite side is the port side, and that's the side that is always facing the port.
Oh, I'm glad you knew that. I've never dug into the origin of those words quite as clearly. It goes on to say, the finger of land threatened to obstruct the view from those of us standing on the high deck. And then it uses another term there. But first, the finger of land, that of course is referring to the peninsula, because if you looked at it from above, it's kind of a long, thin piece of land that's sticking out into the ocean, right?
Right.
Like a finger pointing at something with sort of a blue background, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the finger part. But then they use another nautical term, astern,
right.
The high deck astern.
So towards the back of the ship, basically.
You know what the front is? Oh, it's all trick question. This is the part I review. I gotta be honest with the listeners here. A number of years ago, my parents gave me as a gift this sort of study pack to get a Canadian boating license.
Wow.
And I've never done the test.
Okay.
I've sort of prepared for it repeatedly during vacations.
I think it was all for this article.
Yeah. I did go back to check the book, which is in my office.
Yeah.
To check these things. But that's why I say I have no insight into the origins of the terms.
Right.
Like, you knew where starboard came from.
Yeah.
I did know astern. The front part is the bow.
Oh, the bow, yes.
Spelled like bow,
yes.
But pronounced bow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anyway, the point being this finger of land threatens to obstruct the view of the sun.
Yes.
From those of us who are standing on a high deck astern, there's going to be different levels of decks, obviously, on this boat. And these people are standing on the ones towards the top, probably because it gives them a better view. The sentence continues to say, but we checked by our watches. So, you know, I don't know if you have heard the term land of the midnight sun.
Yes.
Are you familiar with this term?
I am, yes.
What does it mean exactly?
Well, basically, the higher north you go, basically, the sun doesn't really set during certain times of the year.
Yeah. So the sun tantalizingly looks like it's going to set, and then it just goes back up.
Yeah.
And then it goes back down again without setting.
Very teasing.
So you have 24 hours of light, which obviously makes it hard to figure out what time
you are. Yes, that's why they had to check their watches.
Yeah, so it looks like it's going to set. It doesn't set, so they have to check their watches to realize it is evening. It tells us then as it continues for the second time on their cruise north along Norway's western coast, they had a view of the sun at midnight. So this is the land of the midnight sun. They see the sun at midnight. They check their watches to tell it's midnight. And then it's like they have a little quiet celebration. Mm-hmm. What do?
Well, nods and words of agreement rose in multiple languages, Norwegian, English, and other languages.
They said to each other, it's midnight.
Yes.
Yeah, in various languages. Celebration. Now, why was our writer on this boat in the first place?
Well, he says his primary purpose was to sail the fjords, the long glacier-formed inlets.
Glacier-formed. So glaciers are basically big pieces of ice that don't melt year-round, right?
Yeah.
So you got to think here, Ice Age.
Yeah.
You know, giant glaciers heading all over the earth, you know, scraping the land, doing things like that, formations, making these fjords. One thing about that word fjord, it's sort of this northern word that is one of very few that's made it into English.
Yes.
Another one is sort of a name, Bjorn. Like B-J-O-R-N.
Yes,
yeah. That's sort of recognized as a name by most English speakers.
Right.
But there aren't too many Norwegian words
that
are common in English. This is one of them. But obviously, it's not common for everyone because they go on to explain exactly what it is, right?
Yes, yes.
So maybe people have an idea, but they don't exactly know what it is. They describe Norway's western coastline as expansive, which basically means really big, right? Along that route north, they managed to see fjords that were doing something.
Well, they shelter harbor towns over which verdant mountains rise like castle walls. So along the fjords, there are many, many little towns, and there are mountains that kind of rise up as kind of guardians over these harbor towns.
Pretty common to use adjectives in relation to town, like we say factory town or farm town, or in this case, harbor town. A harbor town specifically, it basically means the town is built around the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So we can think probably fishing, right?
Yeah.
It's a little fishing village kind of places. And obviously, they're tucked into these fjords because, you know, they're sheltered from the worst of the sea. It goes on to say that these little harbor towns have verdant mountains rising like castle walls. When I see that word verdant, I think green, lush green.
Yes.
Am I right about that?
Yes, yeah. I believe so. Yes.
Good stuff, good stuff. It's always good to check with the reader to make sure you got the word right. Okay, so they're like castle walls. They aren't actually castle walls, but they're tall and made of stone, right?
Yeah.
In front of many of them, there is a modest lighthouse. Now, why is the lighthouse modest? I think it basically is simple.
Yeah, not very fancy, probably not huge in many aspects, just very simple. It's there to serve a purpose.
Yeah, it's standing sentry or
standing guard.
Yeah. So what's it guarding against? Well, presumably it's guarding against ships just sailing into the side of the fjord.
Yes. Well, protecting ships as they approach the harbor towns.
Yeah. Good stuff. That brings us to our second reading. Let's jump into it now.
On board with the locals. 2 years earlier in Oslo, I had struggled to find things that were uniquely Norwegian. So cosmopolitan and diverse had the nation's capital become. The cruise line, Hurtigruten's six-night Northern Express, would now give me the chance to see Norway among Norwegians. The Richard With is a cruise ship, but also a ferry, taking locals to ports of call up and down the coastline. At mealtimes and onshore excursions, I had the chance to meet families from homes nearby. The biggest thrill. A group of us donned protective suits in the port of Bodø and boarded inflatable boats. Our captain steered us up the Saltstraumen, a small strait that quickly led us into one of the world's strongest tidal currents. Our boat pitched and rocked, our motor seeming at times to wrestle with the strait for control of our destiny as we poured in at high speed under a gray dome of unmoving cloud. We slowed to a swimmer's pace, and around us seagulls climbed and then dove onto broad whirlpools. The maelstroms, famous vortices of such mythical strength that writers from Edgar Allan Poe to Jules Verne promised that to sail as close to any as we did was to risk being sucked into the depths.
Okay, so we learned at the beginning of our second reading under that title, On Board with Locals, that this is not a normal cruise ship. Have you ever taken a cruise?
I have, and I enjoy cruises. They're a lot of fun. But this doesn't seem like a typical cruise ship that is purely for vacation, pleasure,
swimming pools, yeah. Fruit-flavored drinks, shuffleboard on the deck.
Yeah.
It's got a more diverse function. And so there's a reason that this writer is on this ship. Basically, he tells us that 2 years earlier in Oslo, you know what Oslo is?
It's the capital of Norway.
Yeah, it's the big city there. The writer had struggled to find things that were uniquely Norwegian.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of an interesting statement. And I think probably we have come through a time of several decades where this has become true in many countries.
Yeah, I remember when my wife and I, we went on our honeymoon and we went to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of have this image of Hawaii. Hawaii is very, you know, I don't know, Polynesian, cultural kind of thing. But I went and we were in Honolulu and I was just like, this is like any other
American
town, you know, and I was a little bit disappointed.
It's odd you said that. I have always used Hawaii during my time in Asia as an easy way to escape to an American city.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like I was not under the impression it was like Polynesia.
Right.
I thought, oh, America, like Taco Bell. They're going to have Taco Bell.
Exactly.
It's going to be great.
I don't know. I just had this, you know, luau's, this kind of picture of the luau's and the hula dancers and all that stuff. And then I got there and I was like, this is just like California.
It's true, though, because, you know, almost anywhere you go, you can find McDonald's, Coca-Cola, right?
Yeah.
American branded stuff, or at least internationally branded stuff that's all over the place. And well, that is convenient. And sometimes it's good for your wallet because it's lower cost mm-hmm. than specialized local goods. It also means that the uniqueness of different countries kind of fades away. And that clearly is the experience of the writer, because the writer was looking for things that were original, genuine Norway, uniquely Norwegian.
Right. But what's interesting is that he couldn't find anything uniquely Norwegian was because it was cosmopolitan and diverse. So mm-hmm. it wasn't so much just that it was just universally all one thing. It was just, there was so many different types of things from all over the place there. And some of the unique Norwegianness, if that's a word, mm-hmm. was lost.
Yeah. I think the pattern here, though, too, is also pretty universal, meaning you find it everywhere, where if you go to the big city, mm-hmm. you find things that are more international and cosmopolitan.
Yeah, for sure.
What does cosmopolitan mean?
Well, cosmopolitan is just basically having to do with many different parts of the world.
Yeah, it's like a mixture of different countries
altogether,
right? Mm-hmm. So it's more international would be an easy way to say it. But the further you head from that big city, the capital, the more traditional you tend to get, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you might have found if you had, I don't know which part of Hawaii you went to on your honeymoon.
Oahu. Honolulu.
Yeah. The more you get out away from Honolulu, the more you might find, you know, what you consider real Hawaiian kind of culture.
Probably if I went to one of the other islands, maybe.
Well, so that is what our writer tried to do here, right? They took this cruise. I'm going to leave this to you, the name of this cruise line, because you've already proven an ability to say it.
Yes, the cruise line's name is Hurtigruten.
I'm just going to leave it like, I'm going to point at you each time it comes up here. Hurtigruten.
Yes, Hurtigruten.
It has a six-night Northern Express. Now, that is an interesting name because it sounds more like a train
than
a cruise, right?
That's true.
And I guess that sort of hints at the other function of this cruise, right?
Right.
So basically, taking this Northern Express would give the writer the chance to see Norway among Norwegians.
That's
so
correct.
I think that train name is appropriate. I don't know if I've ever told you the story. We've worked together for many years, but there was a time when the high-speed rail was new that I took tickets to the city of Kaohsiung without buying my return ticket. I just assumed you could like get them. But of course, they were all sold out.
Right.
And I ended up coming back to, you know, Taipei on a slow local train.
Oh, my goodness.
And this can't be right, but I feel like it took about 9 hours.
No, that's right. It would take about seven to nine
seriously?
Hours.
Seriously? Yeah. It took forever. And it was
You probably took the slow train. You didn't
it stopped at every stop.
Yeah, it was the
only one that was kind of available.
You didn't take the express slow train.
But the thing that I learned as a result of that experience, you know, it was like it was not a good experience, but I did learn from it that there are a lot of people out there who are using it like an urban subway system.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're getting on and then getting off again one stop later with, you know, their groceries or whatever.
Yeah,
like
sure.
I didn't realize how important it was to people who live in that area.
Sure.
And that story makes me think of this ferry.
Yeah.
Basically, right?
Yeah. I mean, usually when you think about cruise ships, you think about vacation, you think about, you know, entertainment, but this is a dual function, right? There's people who are there literally as tourists, but at the same time, it functions as a ferry. So it takes locals from one port to another.
And again, I've never been to Norway, but I have been to parts of northern Canada, and you get to sort of a level north, like you get north enough that there aren't roads between towns anymore.
Right.
People fly
or
have to take ships when that's possible or whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I assume that's sort of what's going on here, where people, if they want to travel within the country, they need to take this ship. So for local people, this is a ferry where it's getting them to the place they need to go. Mm-hmm. For people who want to explore the north, it's cruise ship, you know, because they can take a 6-day vacation to check out the north. But that's what I assume is going on here. It says it takes locals to ports of call up and down the coastline. A port of call is basically a term that you use in cruise shipping, right?
Just places where the cruise ships would dock, and then the guests on the cruise, they can get down and they can explore the city for the day and then kind of get back on the ship.
The city or the tiny harbor town, as the case may be.
Yes.
They give you 20 minutes because that's more than enough to see the entire town. Reminds me of Penghu. Have you ever been on those cruises?
Yes.
You get to those.
Or Mazu or Jingmen, that kind of thing.
You get to those lovely little islands with maybe 300 people or 30 people.
Yep.
Definitely worth it, though, if you're going to go to the area. Mm-hmm. Do check it all out. Okay. So at mealtimes and on shore excursions, mealtimes, obviously, that's when they're eating on the ship.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Shore excursions is when you can get off the ship to check things out.
Yep.
Our writer had a chance to meet people. Yep. Who did he meet?
Well, he met families and homes nearby. So again, locals would board the cruise ship as a ferry, and they would use it to travel from one port to another.
Okay. Now, there's definitely, this is where we get into the hints of danger in the next section here, the biggest thrill. A group of people on the ship donned protective suits
in the port of Buda.
I tried to remember that when you read it. And boarded inflatable boats. Now, why were they wearing these protective suits? Donning something just means put on. So they put on protective suits. Why were they doing that?
Well, they were visiting this small strait called Saltstraumen. And it is known for being beautiful, but also having one of the world's strongest tidal currents.
Now, you know, when I read that term protective suit, I usually think of like a chemical suit or doctors dealing with diseases.
Right.
Why on earth are they putting on protective suits for an area with strong currents?
I'm thinking more like life jackets, that kind of thing that will keep them afloat if they do fall into the water.
There's this term that I grew up with that I think they're talking about, but this may be like uniquely Canadian English.
Right.
We refer to suits as survival suits.
Oh, interesting.
So it's like a full body suit that has like a life jacket in it.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to protect you from the cold water.
Oh, that makes sense,
if you fall out of the boat.
Because you are pretty far north.
Yeah.
And
with
glaciers,
the strong tides.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think of these as basically suits they're putting on in case they fall out of the little...
So kind of like wetsuits with life preservers inside.
Well, but wetsuits let the water in and then use the water to insulate you. So it's more like a dry suit.
Dry suit.
Like I don't know how many of our listeners are familiar with diving in ice water, but there's this special kind of suit people put on called a dry suit.
Okay, so basically a suit to keep you warm, dry, and
keep
floating.
You alive.
Yes.
I would think of it as keep you alive if you fall in the water and they have to turn the boat around to get you. Obviously, tidal currents, tides, is when the water comes in and goes out at different times.
Yeah.
Currents are basically like pathways or streams the water is falling.
Right.
Following, pardon me.
Yeah.
And it can, you know, kind of suck you out.
Yes.
Push you in. Very strong, powerful water movements. Yeah. So presumably if you're in a little inflatable boat, you could flip over, or it could be a rocky kind of ride if you hit a current the wrong way.
Right.
And we kind of hear about what happened like that. The boat pitched and rocked, and the motor seemed at times to wrestle with the strait for control of their destiny. Pitched means kind of the same thing as rocking, except it's front and back instead of side to side.
Kind of go up and down a little bit, shakes a lot. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they poured in at high speed under a gray dome of unmoving cloud. So it's very cloudy.
Yep.
They're sort of describing this. They're moving in with the tide. That's the pouring in, the water and the boat all moving in together.
Mm-hmm.
They slowed to a swimmer's pace, about the speed of someone swimming.
Mm-hmm.
And around them, seagulls climbed and then dove onto broad whirlpools. And then here's two words I'm going to leave to you. The maelstroms, famous vortices of such mythical strength that the writers from Edgar Allan Poe to Jules Verne promised that to sail as close to any as they did was to risk being sucked into the depths. So this is kind of like when you're draining the bathtub and you see like a little tornado by the drain.
Yep.
That's what this is, but it's in the ocean and it's big. Right?
Yeah.
So what is a maelstrom?
Well, maelstrom is like you described, it's kind of a violent whirlpool, right? And it just sucks things as it drains, and it just kind of pulls things into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always think of like adventure movies or fantasy movies where the adventurers kind of get stuck in these whirlpools and their lives are threatened because they might get sucked in. And the other word here is the vortex or vortices. That's the plural of vortex. And again, that's the central thing that has this force that kind of sucks things in.
Now, listeners, that brings us to the end of today's program, but it doesn't bring us to the end of the article. So we hope you'll be able to join us again tomorrow for the rest of it. Until then, I'm Simon.
I'm Campbell.
Saying bye for now.
Bye-bye.